Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Major news.
White Wine Question Time is going live. We're doing three shows in London's West End in the autumn. I can't believe it. And we've got some incredible guests lined up for you. So on Saturday, the 18th of September at the Leicester Square Theatre, we will be doing a show with Craig Revel Horwood. Yeah. Just as you can smell the sequence of Strictly as it comes back to our screen. Then on the 9th of October, I can't believe they've all agreed to do this, but we're reuniting the cast of Grange Hill. So I've got Todd Carty, Tucker, Lee McDonald, Zamo, and Alison Valentine, who played Faye, and there'll be more to be announced. And then finally, on Saturday, the 13th of November, the cast of Dunbreeding. So Tracy Ann Oberman, Julie Graham, Tamsin Athwaite, Denise Welsh, Julie Newman will all be joining us to do a live show. Tickets are on sale now, available from the Live Nation website, Ticketmaster, or wherever you get your tickets. Come and see us! Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And I am beyond thrilled that this week's guest has agreed to come on and talk to me. She has been on the top of many a podcaster's guest wish list for years now and has never appeared on a podcast before. So the fact that she's raising a glass with me today is genuinely thrilling. But who is she? Well, if you passed her in the street, you'd probably not even bat an eyelid, which is exactly how she likes it. And yet, she is one of the biggest selling authors in the world who's just concluded one of the biggest selling series in publishing history. In 2008, she was working in television as a head of production for comedians Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer's TV production company, happily married to Niall, a screenwriter, and raising two teenage boys living here in London. And then her life changed. She became enthralled with a book by Stephanie Myers, Twilight, a young adult vampire love story, which subsequently went on to change everything in her life beyond recognition. Inspired by the book, she decided to write and post her own stories on fanfiction.net called Master of the Universe, where she gained an audience that built rapidly. Her leads, Christian Grey and Anastasia Steele, and the six books that made up the 50 Shades of Grey trilogy, were for definitely a more adult audience, and their love of erotica, bondage, and each other captivated audiences the world over, selling more than 165 million copies in 50 plus different languages. It went on to become the fastest selling paperback of all time, before then being adapted with her as a producer into a feature film trilogy that grossed more than $1.3 billion. Suddenly, the former production manager held the keys to her own multimedia empire of kink and erotica. And now, as she unleashes Freed, the sixth and final, possibly, book in this series, she's about to embark on the next chapter of her life. So, how do you follow a success story like that? Let's ask her and dial up E.L. James. Afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you in your Empire of Kink?
Thank you. Empire of Kink is fine. Thank you very much indeed.
You are kind of sat at the helm of this. I mean, it's more than a book. It's an everything now. It is. It's a film. It's, you've got merch. You've got it all going on. And yet you have, haven't you? You even sell sex toys.
We have. Yes. We do sex toys. And that's been, has been an experience and a joy to work with the team at Love Honey. They're wonderful people.
I want to be at one of those meetings where you sit down and go, no, let's do this. You know, how does that work, Erica?
It's great because, well, pre-pandemic, we all sat around my kitchen table looking at samples, and there's various things. I say, oh, this is a bit, you know, high level. I remember nipple clamps that you could jumpstart Frankenstein with, and I was like, no, let's take it down a notch. And then my son would come in and said, Mum, can you get the sex toys off the table because my chemistry tutor's coming.
So. I mean, when we sit and recount conversations like that, Mum, can you get the sex toys off the table, my chemistry teacher's coming around, it is a bizarre place in which you find yourself after the most extraordinary journey.
It is, and it's one of those things that you think, well, I never thought I'd be saying that or have my children say that to me either. So it's been, they've had an education as well.
So. Haven't they just? I think you all have.
Yes, absolutely.
I really am so appreciative of you coming on the podcast because you've never done a podcast before, have you?
No, I haven't. I don't actually really like talking about myself, but you know, we had such a good time. I just enjoyed the thing that we did for the Fane event, so I said, okay, let's do it. And thank you for making me feel at ease. So I really appreciate it.
Over the last, I mean, it's 10 years now, really, isn't it?
Yes.
Over the last 10 years, you've really not enjoyed the spotlight that kind of follows you around.
Not really.
But your story is remarkable and incredible. And I think as a writer, you can surely appreciate that your story is
absolutely
fabulous.
I mean, I can step outside of it and go, oh, my goodness, how did this happen? Why did this happen? And marvel at you know, everything that I've been through and everything that I've done, and weep occasionally as well. So it's been an extraordinary journey, and one that I'm still on, frankly. So I it's weird because success has come to me, you know, in middle age. So I'm not out like a sort of young footballer, you know. I'd better stop there because I'll say something that someone could sue me for.
No, but you're not yes. Sat in Mahiki's with, you know, a yes. bottle of champagne with a firework coming out the top.
No, but I wouldn't mind now and again. I had a bit of that when I was actually on location, but let's not talk about that.
I wanted to deep dive the biggest and most incredible moments that sort of mark your journey with 50 Shades. So my first question to you sits around that kind of old well-worn phrase of, you know, you couldn't write it, or sometimes people say, oh, you couldn't make it up. I wondered if you could recall some of the key moments along the way since you first put pen to paper with Christian and Anastasia that could possibly start with either of those as a prefix.
Well, I think that there's so many things, and I'm going back to the early doors of Twitter, okay? And I would publish a chapter online, and we used to crash Twitter. That was back in the day, really, back in 2009 or 2010. And it would be funny because I'd go quiet and everyone was like, she's going to update, you know. So when you publish a chapter at a time and you you know, people are reading it, it was that was an extraordinary time. And then move on to the publication. I remember it got so popular as a fan fiction, I thought someone's going to copy this. I need to protect it. So I thought, well, I'll publish it and I'll carry on working in telly and all of that. So I did, and you know, it did okay, but it slowly built and built. And then it became second in an awards thing on a book site. And then it just took off. It really just went crazy to the point that Christmas, so this was Christmas 2011, I got an email from Hollywood, and I thought it was someone pulling my leg. I thought, this is ridiculous. Someone wants the rights to my my books. And I thought, that's insane. And I got in touch with my husband's agent, because my husband's a screenwriter. And I said, oh, this happened. She said, oh, calm down. This is just Hollywood, blah, blah, blah. Let me read what you've done. And she did. And she said, right. And she came with me to New York, where under my first publisher, the book was published in January 2012. So that was the final book, which was 50 Shades Freed, was published in New York. And I ended up in a room full of women I felt like a rock star. It was unbelievable. It was a shell-shocking moment. These people had read this tiny little book that had been published as an ebook only, print on demand, and my poor publisher was based in Australia, couldn't keep up with demand for this book. And did this book launch. All these women, people wanted to interview me. What's happening here? It was insane. And also at this time, I got more and more people saying, film rights, film rights, film rights. So
yeah, you hadn't even signed a major publishing deal at this point. You've got Hollywood knocking.
Yes.
You've got these kind of Beatle mania style scenes.
Yes.
With grown women.
It was like, whose life have I hijacked? It was extraordinary. So my agent, Val, said, right, we're going to get a publisher who can deal with this kind of demand. And so I met all the publishers as well during that time. So that was very interesting. But it was...
Which for an author, by the way, is major, right?
Yes.
You're sitting with the big six.
Absolutely.
The big six publishing houses.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it was extraordinary. And it was Anne Massetti who said, I want these on the front table at Barnes & Noble. And she was fantastic. And I remember jumping up and down on Broadway, because their offices are the huge offices on Broadway. And I said, this is amazing. And then while we were getting the books ready to be published, I was also in Hollywood, because everyone wanted to buy the rights, except Disney, funny enough.
Really?
Yes, funny enough.
I wonder why.
So we met lots of people, and it was so crazy that everyone wanted to meet us. And Val said, we cannot physically get around Hollywood and see everybody. They're going to have to come to us just purely from a logistics level. You can't go here and then go there. Yeah. And then, because it's, the studios have spread out over LA and the traffic's dreadful. So she said, right, we'll get them to come to us. And so we took a room in Soho House in West Hollywood and took meetings, and it was ridiculous. And then we'd go back to the hotel
with movie studios.
Well, it actually was the producers. Movie studios, you go to the movie, we went to various places, and in some of them I got to drive the golf carts around the studio lot. That was just such a
thrill, isn't
that
it?
Was it's a thrill.
It's so naff, but so fun.
I don't play golf, so it almost made me want to take up the sport. So we then went back to the hotel, and we would end up whispering to each other, because we didn't tell, no one knew what we were doing, but it was all in the press the next day. Everything, our itinerary, everything. So there'd be a white van. I said, okay, this is listening to us. What's going on? And we'd just whisper in this hotel, because you can't keep a secret in Hollywood. We just can't. It's just impossible. I mean, the fact is...
So you and Val locked up, just whispering under the duvets, going...
Are they listening? Who's that outside? So that was one of those moments, really.
Wow.
And then finally, the book came out, and all of the hectares. And I remember going to Seattle. And I'd never been to, I did a book signing, I did a book tour and all that. And that was incredible. So I got to meet readers, which was, and they start telling their stories. And that's been a huge part of this journey. But also, I'd only been to Seattle via Google Earth and Street View. So when I got there, I thought, oh, it's much hillier than I thought it was.
Which is, by the way, just for anybody that hasn't read 50 Shades, it's where it's all set.
It's set, yeah.
So you've written these six books based on Google Earth.
Yes.
That's your only physical experience of it.
But it's interesting because I since the final three from Christian's point of view, I've actually been to Seattle, so I know what it's like now. So and it's a wonderful, beautiful place. But we went on a tour. And the guy came up and turned up and said, oh, where do you want to go? And I said, I want to see the 520 bridge. And he went, what? Because it's just a road bridge. And he said, that's the space. No, I want to see the 520 bridge because I rode a car chase over it. So I wanted to see what it was like and what have you. So that was one of those moments.
So that was kind of that was kind of to affirm your research.
Yes.
I mean, and there was so much that you had to do to affirm your research. Including, I think, am I right in saying that you asked to go and try out a car to see if it was possible to have sex in the front seats?
That was back in the day. That was, I mean,
how does that work?
Well, I wanted to do people having sex in a car, and I thought, okay, out, this is an R8. You know, I've never sat in an R8, so I have no idea. And I rang our local Audi garage and said, you know, there's a sales thing in West London. And I said, hi, I'm writing an erotic novel, blah, blah, blah. Can you have sex in an R8? And the guy said, no, absolutely no way. I went, oh, okay. So I wrote the chapter. I thought, I just don't believe that. So I snuck in to this place and all the cars then, this first beautiful Audi R8 was in the reception area. And I thought, And I said to the receptionist, can you just sit in the cars, and, you know? And she said, yeah, go ahead. And I sat, and I sort of sidled in, and I just looked at the person, she could totally have sex in here. I went back and rewrote that. And then, I just to check on various things, I had a mini at the time, a little mini one. And I said, I just want to try this thing. My poor husband, I mean, what he's had to endure, it's like, I just want to try this thing. So on a Saturday afternoon, I was sitting on his lap in my mini. And so, right, now you put your feet there. And we were fully clothed and all this. There was a football match on. We used to live near Brentford Football Stadium. And these people were walking down the road going, what are those two doing? And I was just working out the choreography because it's all about choreography.
Just blocking it.
We were blocking the shots, as it were. So, yes, that was a moment as well.
I mean, Noel ended up working with you on the movies,
yes,
and adapted the books to the screen for you. How was that? I mean, it was the making or the breaking of a marriage.
It was. he's very thorough and has been doing it for years and years. He's written, Monica the Glen, Ballycus Angel, Spender, Pie in the Sky. He's got a huge and he's directed as well, so you know his knowledge there is extraordinary. And there's me all bouncy and say, oh, why don't we do this? And so I think he finds that quite difficult to deal with, because I'm quite scattered in my thought processes. So I think it was a challenge for both of us.
I did love he gave an interview where he talked about his experience of living alongside you, working alongside you. One of the my favourite sound bites from that was, he said, I'm the least romantic fecker that ever lived. Ask my wife, Erica. Our first Christmas together, I bought her a tin opener, and my earliest experience of kinky sex was her trying to shove it up my arse.
He's also prone to, he's Irish, so there's a little bit of, you know, poetic license in all of that. But I might still, I mean, I still have the tin opener, so I might just, it's there, it's a threat.
You can put it in the merch line now, can't you? Go alongside the butt plugs.
Absolutely. If they've really misbehaved.
But I mean, even the fact that he's having to justify his erotic life is a sort of a sentence that needs to be prefixed with, you just can't make this up.
Yeah, absolutely. 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 But the wonderful thing about my husband is he's very, very funny. usually at my expense. So he'll have me rolling on the floor laughing at myself, which is both irritating but also hilarious. So,
well, I think what you both managed to bring to the table was remarkable, because you were working under the most intense pressure, the pressure of success. And people, we often feel, we talk about success as some sort of glorious experience, because quite often it is, but sometimes it can also come with its own set of demands. Was it a kind of balm having him by your side because he knows you better than anyone else?
Yes.
That's a no.
Well, no, I'm just saying, my husband is, you know, tea and sympathy is what we want. My husband does the tea. That's what he's good at.
That's no sympathy.
He's fantastic. I actually put it in a book. I put it in one of the books about one of the tea and sympathy, because he's just, well, I'm just gonna, you know, just get on with it sort of thing. He's kind of like that. But no, he has been incredibly supportive throughout all of this. And he's had to put up with a great deal, and it's, you know, he's been amazing. So, and he's still funny.
Good.
I couldn't ask him.
Still
more.
Funny.
Yes.
Yeah. And you've still got the tin opener. There's still time.
Yes, yes. It's there. Always.
This has been one hell of a journey. 10 years of... well, a success that you just could never have dared to dream of. And as you write your acknowledgements at the end of every book, I know that for an author, that's probably one of the hardest sections of a book to write, because you want to thank everybody that's played a part in what has been your experience with that book. You're closing down the whole chapter of 50 Shades now. Who do you need to thank? Who is in your acknowledgements, and what part did they play?
Well, I think the biggest thank you goes out to readers, you know, who wanted more and still want more, and encouraged me to just get on with it. I think they the experience of meeting people whose lives have been changed by something that I've written, women who have never read books particularly, who now are in book groups, who have formed, you know, now got hundreds and hundreds of books on their Kindles and things. That has been an extraordinary experience. And the letters that I get and the stories that they tell me, you know, things like, you know, thank you for getting me through my chemotherapy, through the death of a sibling, a parent. I just fell into these books and I just got carried away. There was one woman who wrote me a note that said, you know, I picked up your books expecting, you know, don't really know what to expect, haven't really, and then I found myself. And that was, I mean, I'll get teary just thinking about it.
By all means do, because you know what? You don't realise when you're putting a book out there where it lands and what it means to people.
No, and what it means to people. And I think that's, people have shared with me their darkest moments and have thanked me for letting them escape them through these characters and living out certain things and exploring certain things. And, you know, thank you for saving my marriage. Thank you for this. I mean, it's like, wow. So I think first and foremost, it's a huge thank you to them.
When you say that these women felt that they'd discovered themselves, we're talking about their sexual selves, which is a conversation that not a lot of people go there on. But for some women, I think there was an awakening with your literature. It re-sparked something in them and their relationships, maybe, but certainly in them. You got a lot of that feedback, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I did. And also from people who've suffered, you know, horrific childhoods as well. And that's really dark. And people saying, I mean, that's what the person who I mentioned earlier said, you know, I found myself. And watching someone go through an experience where they had to re-examine their lives and what have you, was and ended up happy, because it's, you know, this is a happy ever after. had enabled her to go on that journey too. So it's two things. It's on one level acknowledging female desire and knowing that, yeah, actually, you know, if it's done well, we're really keen kind of thing. Without putting it too bluntly, and sort of on this much darker on a much darker level, so which is really that I didn't expect either.
Because I think, you know, people, the headlines that sat around 50 Shades and the thing that drove the narrative around it was, you know, it's a sex fest. It's erotica. Yes. It's bondage. But actually, when you strip it back, it's about a man who, as a child fundamentally, was seduced by a much older woman who was predatory and became incredibly damaged as a result.
Yes, I think he started off that way because of his very, very early days as a very small child. But yeah, he wasn't helped. let's put it that way.
No.
So,
and that's the character that you got to unpeel across all of those books so that we could better understand what in the first instance was this dazzlingly handsome, very rich man that liked to whip and tie you up, and, you know, the world was his oyster. And actually what we found was there's actually a very damaged and damaged soul.
Yeah. Very fragile soul, yes. And then I think that was, you know, it was a journey getting to know them for me, these two characters. And there were only two things that I definitely knew at the start, was that she was much stronger than he was and that he was fragile. And then it grew from there. So yeah, that was quite something. One of the things that I enjoyed was falling in love with both of them, and I didn't expect to do that. So I'm very, very fond of both those characters, and that's a weird thing to have them in your head and bickering now because, you know, they know each other so well,
And they've had children,
and we left them when. And she's pregnant with their second child, I think, is where we leave them in 50 Shades Freed. So
yeah. So they're probably arguing about who got most sleep last night as opposed to what time shall I see you in the red room?
Yeah, no, that's not happening. I'm breastfeeding, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. Who knows?
So
who knows
what's not, going not, on? Not the nipple clamps right now, please. Yeah.
No. Absolutely. Ow.
What was the response from, you know, the community that kind of the bondage or the BDSM community? Were they okay with this book?
It was quite mixed, to be honest. I'd get some, you know, flaming and what have you, and then I'd get people who turn up at my book signing saying, "Thank you so much for writing this book. I'm submissive. This is my life." So it's kind of okay, whatever.
Horses for courses, right?
Horses for courses, absolutely. I mean, that's fundamentally everyone's kink is their own. It's as simple as that. And as long as it's safe, sane, and consensual, who are we to judge what people get up to in the bedroom?
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot,
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Your success with 50 Shades was fast and furious and global. You know, when I look at the timeline, you quit your job in the January and by March you'd signed, was it your film deal?
I signed the publishing deal first, and then I think the film deal came later that year. I can't remember when.
But in the space of a year, you went from production manager to author, published author, to film producer, all in the space of, I mean, under a year.
Yes.
So, and then all of the success that subsequently came off the back of that year, going into 2012. How did you process and manage the changes that success brought about in your life? And what, if anything, would you have done differently with the gift of hindsight?
Oh, well, I think it's an ongoing process, to be honest, because you just still... I'm still trying to learn to do that and to manage all of this, to manage dealing with this. I mean, we said earlier, I love that I can go into Marks and Spencer's and buy some knickers and no one is really paying me any attention whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I've seen the other side of that where Dakota Johnson and Jamie Dornan are pursued hotly down the streets by various people. It's so invasive. I remember one time we went to a particular restaurant and I'd been very careful to keep my children out of the press, and it was my son's graduation, and we were papped coming out. And they got the children, and the children were thrilled. They were absolutely thrilled.
Oh, all these years, you've kept them quiet.
Yeah, I know.
Kept them private, like, and they're like, "That's really, amazing."
Really.
Do you like the fact, though, that your success was so instant and so fast that by the time it came about and people were asking things of you, you had earned the right to say no?
Because. Yes.
You know, a struggling author has to jump through every hoop possible to get their book publicised and talked
about. Absolutely, absolutely.
Yours did that through the community that blew up online. So actually, you could just go, "I'm not doing that." And was there great power in that? No,
yes,
the ability
absolutely.
To say no,
absolutely. And it took me a while to learn that you don't have to answer every question, and that's that. Once you realise that, that's very liberating. No, oh, just move on. I'll just say, and that because people used to ask me things about my sex life, and that actually, yeah. My sex life's nothing to do with you. So,
yeah.
So it's that kind of invasive stuff that you can avoid, and it's been a
yeah. You must have had a lot of that actually, because it's kind of an obvious line of questioning, isn't it?
It is, and it's
you
like,
and your husband, eh?
Yeah. Well, hey, and I'm going, yeah, hey, yeah, none of your business.
But also, a lot of people won't expect you to say no, because you're saying no to the stuff that most people hanker after: fame, recognition, call it what you like. So when you turn around and go no, were there a few jaws on the floor of like, huh?
Yes. But that's as it should be, really. You know, no is a very powerful word, and should be employed a lot sometimes. So
did you ever feel at any point across this tremendous journey of yours underestimated?
Very much so. Oh, very much so. And I think that's, you know, you're middle-aged, overweight, what that we're going to going to France. And the journalist saying, yeah, you British woman, what can you tell us about sex? And that was interesting.
Being that you're too old and past it and all of that
and British
to have an opportunity to share any wisdom around sex.
Absolutely. Or just I wouldn't say there's wisdom. I would just say there's a good story around it.
You're quite right. You know, you came from nowhere. Your success walked through the door almost before you did. If you think about it.
Yes, it did. Who are you? as it's leading me out of the door. That's a very good way to put it, actually.
And so you walk into the room hot on the heels, you know, in the slipstream of your own success, and start to employ the word no. But I can still imagine that, A, that would have shocked people, but also it would have been like, was there an assumption that you should be, A, grateful to be where you are, you know, because you are not, you know, some young whippersnapper or a guy?
I don't know.
You tell me.
I don't know. And I think that is one of the things people don't know. Well, what does she want? What's she after? What is it?
And I can imagine you must have confused people.
Absolutely. And the fact is, it is confusing, I think, for people. And I am grateful. I'm extraordinarily grateful to people who have helped me along the way. I mean, but principally to readers who want to read what I write. I mean, I think for anyone who writes, to be read is the ultimate goal.
And glorious.
And that's it. And if you love it, fantastic. If you don't love it, that's fine too. So, but please don't give me a hard time on Twitter, because it is what it is. So,
no pylons, please.
So I think that's been part of it, learning how to handle all the trolls and what have you, and the mute and block buttons are marvelous when it comes to that.
Absolutely. But when it came to navigating Hollywood and big publishing houses and everything that sits around, you know, the empire that literally sits around 50 Shades, there must have been times where people did underestimate your ability to manage all of that.
I think I probably overestimated my ability to manage it, to be honest, which is sort of a little bit like the flip side of that. And some of all of that has been extraordinarily painful. But, you know, at the end of the day, if you've got people clamoring to see movies, if you're clamoring to read books, that's such a gift that, you know, you have to, yeah, you sort of go with it. And I think for any woman working out, it's the process of being heard. And sometimes we have to shout very loudly to be heard, and that's just wearing, I think.
Yeah.
It's very wearing.
So can be.
It can be really, really wearing. It's been an education.
Is it nice to have a voice?
Yes. Oh, God, yes. I think, you know, we all deserve a voice, always. And I think it's important. And I think it's important for young women coming up to see that you do.
With the success that came, the expectation for more, right? More books from you. Got to do more. Got to follow it up. Now. Need them now. How did you cope with that? Did you ever entail a writer's block moment or a moment of feeling like I haven't got that next book here yet in me?
Thank God, no, I haven't. I haven't actually encountered that. I have at least, let's have a think. I've got that one. I've got that one. I've got that one. I don't think I'll ever do that one, and I've got that one. I have stories I want to tell. I really do. And I feel that at the moment, Christian and Anna, they're in a good place. Let's park them over there. Maybe go back to them. Maybe not. I mean, I don't have plans to, But I keep saying to people, never say never, because you never know.
You never know.
But I have other stories I definitely want to tell. I mean, people have been asking me for the second book in, I wrote a book called The Mister. They want the second book in that. And I have, I forgot about that one. So I also have a book that's written, but it ends on such a horrible cliffhanger. The only way to publish things that have got, and this is to anyone who's writing, if you've got a horrible cliffhanger, write the other book and have them ready to go, because waiting.
But can I just flag that you just went, oh, and I've got another book that's already written. How do you forget that you've written an entire book?
Because I did it a long time ago. I did it.
I mean, my memory's not great at the moment, but I think I'd remember a book.
Well, there's a lot going on. Okay, what can I say?
I've got to follow up. I've got to write the other. How long does it take to write a book? Like, give me, for example, the time that you invested in the book that you just forgotten.
In the book that was written about 6, 7 weeks, 8 weeks. It was like during that time, I that was in 2009, I think 2009. I wrote 4 books, one of which
in a year.
In a year, yes. Let me just check. That was 1, 2, 3, 4. Yes, one of which became 50 Shades of Grey. So this goes back to the twilight and Stephanie Meyer, who I'm also incredibly grateful for, because she flipped this switch that was like, oof, I'd always wanted to be a writer. And, I fell in love with her books, and it was like a vacation, and just remembering sitting there reading 4 books in 5 days. I mean, that was fantastic. And there's nothing like having a book that you just can't put down. And for me,
gorging on it.
Absolutely.
It's glorious, isn't it?
And for me, what's so wonderful is I've managed to produce books that some people that they can't put them down. And that's just lovely as well. So
there's no better or more bittersweet feeling than getting, you know, the final few pages of an amazing book. And you think, oh, no, I don't want it to end, but I've got to get to the end. It's just so. And then afterwards, I have to have what I call a palate cleanse. I have to go and read a magazine for a day or something else. I have to cleanse my palate of that book before I can start something else.
Absolutely. Or you've read it so quickly that you have to read it again, because you'll be something else that you've missed and what have you. And that's such a treat. Oh, I didn't realize that, because you just, you know, so excited reading through it.
So. There's something so glorious about loving reading, isn't there? My son doesn't, and it really upsets me.
Our children don't. In fact, my youngest son, you know, I think if we get him to read the Guinness Book of Records, we're lucky. And people, I say, have your sons read your book? And I went, no. And part of me thinking, I really don't want them to read my books. But part of me thinking, yes, just read something, please.
Just a book.
But I'm not allowed to say that. I'm not allowed to say my eldest son gets very cross. He will read. He does read. But my younger son, less so. They're gamers. You know, they've been on gaming
since. It's a generational thing.
I know. It is. They've got so many things competing for their attention.
But nothing makes me feel as happy as the prospect of an afternoon with a book in the sun on holiday.
I can't wait to go. I've got so many books I have to finish. I can't wait to go on holiday and just do that. Just read.
Read and read and read. Mm. And I'm still slightly reeling at the fact that you wrote 4 books in 1 year, one of which went on to become one of the biggest selling books of all time.
Well, you know,
that was a vintage year.
It you can see it fell out of me. It was weird. And it's one of those things people ask me about it, and I just don't like to look at it too closely in terms of what, how, why, because you don't want to examine your process, because it happened. It was great. I enjoyed it. It takes a lot longer now, and probably the higher quality writing as a result. But my God, it was freeing, and it was like riding an open top car with the wind in your hair and a sunny day, steaming through the countryside. It was lovely. It was great fun.
But if you've got that in you and you just need to get it out and on the page. There is no greater feeling,
there's
is there?
There's nothing. And that is a joyous feeling.
Wow. Aren't you lucky to do a job that you love so much?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But I love it. And sometimes it's so hard. It's so hard as well. It can be it's quite lonely too, except when you really love the people that you're writing about. It's less lonely then.
Then you're in good company.
You're in good company, absolutely.
Yeah. And they have to do exactly as you say, because you're in charge.
Well, no, I have to do what they say. I mean, that's what people say. No, it's actually the other way around.
Really?
And that's, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Sometimes you just go, but I thought, okay, this is what we're doing. It's. I can't even explain that to you.
That's weird. I know you said you've never had a writer's block, but I know recently you had what you described as a brain fart, which I think is almost like a hangover that's kicked in very late after the most incredible highs and possibly lows. I don't know. That's your experience of the last 10 years, that I think that you've almost had like a PTSD reaction to your transformative success.
I think so. I think it's most mainly to do with the negative sides of all of this. And I didn't have a good time making the first movie. I just shudder thinking about it. But yes, that was incredibly stressful. And I had this moment where I just forgot everything.
So your brain fart, was this in lockdown?
No. This is before lockdown. This is in, I think it was October. September, October 2019, and I was in Cornwall, and I just suddenly started feeling odd, and I phoned my husband, who was walking our dogs, and he came back and he found me sat in my little study that I have in our house in Cornwall, and I couldn't remember where I was, and so my husband took me to Bodmin Hospital, and they're not a major trauma unit. So they said, no. And I was put in an ambulance. I was blue lighted to Truro. And I have no recollection of any of this. And when I came, what they kept asking me, I knew who I was and I had kids and all of that kind of thing. But I thought the Prime Minister was David Cameron. But yes, I just couldn't believe it when he said, no, it's Boris Johnson. What? You're kidding. I just couldn't wrap my head around it. Not that I remember any of this, because I didn't make any short-term memory during that time. It was just very odd, but I think it was about 18 hours, maybe less than that, or not until I finally went, hello.
And what and was it? What did the doctor say had happened to you?
It's called global transient amnesia. And I said, that sounds like a catch-all.
Covers all bases.
Covers all bases. It just sounds like you don't quite know what happened. That was it. And please God, it doesn't happen again. Because it's frightening. And I got very clingy. My poor husband, I got very clingy after that. And suffered a spate of panic attacks, but that seems to have died down as well.
But I understand that. So, and do you think it was just life catching up?
I don't know. I think it was probably stress related. You can get it if you step into very, very cold water. If you had incredibly rigorous sex. Sadly, that wasn't the cause.
That was my next question.
And it's stress. So I think it was probably a catch up. Yes. It was a bit of a wake up. You know, just sort yourself out, Erica. I still haven't, but I'll try. so there we go.
It's a lot to process. And I think, you know, at the risk of repeating myself, people think that when you have enormous success, it's just a joyous experience. But with great success comes great expectation. And that's a lot to carry around.
I think so. It is. And but I have got quite broad shoulders. So
are you glad that this didn't happen to you as a younger woman and that this success came to you at this stage in your life when you had wisdom and life experience to kind of better manage
it? I think from I think for me, I'm glad it happened at a stage where my children didn't need me as much. I think that's my thought on that. If I'd had really young children, that would have been, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do half the things I've been able to do. So that I think it came at the right time.
Now that you've parked Christian and Anna in a nice place with baby number two incoming, what's life like without them? You've lived with these guys for so long.
It's that, well, they're not far away. They're in my head. They are continually in my social media. You know, people reading the books and even finding the books. I mean, lots of people don't even know that there is a trilogy written in his point of view.
Yeah,
which I find staggering. But yes, they're both out there. So I do get that feedback, but I also have all of these other characters who are, you know, trying to get themselves
heard. Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens with them. And I think Christian and Anna will continue bumbling away in the background and hopefully behaving themselves. Who knows?
So they're resting.
They're not retired.
They're resting at the moment. Yeah, they may come back.
They're resting. They're enjoying their HEA, as we say,
which is
happy ever after.
Happy ever after. Okay, I thought that was some sort of bondage acronym.
No.
It's like, what, with two kids, they still find the time for that? Respect.
Oh, I think they'll find a bit of time. If you've got enough staff, you can find that time, I'm sure.
I love it. I like, we're hypothesizing about what could they, you would know, you write them. Yes, you're right.
Well, it's interesting. You say that. And I remember on the movie, they said, oh, we need to put, there's a bit where they visit Christian's mother's grave, and he said, oh, you need to put the name on. I said, I don't know what it is. I said, oh, I can't make it something. I have to write it first. So they covered it up and just put Ella. So that's, I wouldn't let them come up with a name. I said, no, you can't.
But suddenly the protection kicks in. And like, no. It's,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And then I've written it. Now we know. So that was interesting. And it's weird because people, I say, I won't know until I write it. It's not all sitting there waiting. It's out here waiting to come in. So that's the interesting thing.
You know, getting to know you online has been a joy. I really hope that one day we can convert it to a real life experience.
Yes, I would like that very much. You've popped my podcast cherry.
I really have.
And
I didn't even ask you to do anything kinky.
I know. Still got that tin opener. Just remember.
Thank you. And continued success in all that you do.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to hear and understand your story. It really is. More power to you.
Thank you. And thank you for this. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, good. Thanks, Erica. E.L. James. Wow, what a treat. Her first podcast interview. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. As always, the show is produced by me, Kate Thornton, with Libby Knowles and Richard Hatherall for Yahoo UK. Music comes courtesy of the talented Andy Bell. We'll be back next week with more great guests. And in the meantime, if you are so inclined, please do feel free to head over to rate and review us. It truly helps other people to find and discover the show. I'll see you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.